You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Monday, August 8th, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. I am back from my travels, ladies and gentlemen. The stock market down nearly 3 percentage points, but Treasury yields up. Who knew? We'll talk to Jeff Madrick, author of The Case for Big Government and his new book, The Age of Greed, The Triumph of Finance and the Decline of America, 1970 to the Present, on just how nefarious the S&P ratings agency is, and also apparently inaccurate. And then later in the program, 45,000 Verizon workers have gone on strike today, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know how that's affecting your phone service. AT&T, not on strike, still can't get reception. But at least they're unionized. And we will be talking to Laura Claussen, the labor editor from Daily Kos. Later in the program. Quickly, continuing on, there are still massive anti-privatization strikes and protests in Israel, of all places. The Arab Spring, I guess, is now the Semitic Spring, perhaps? And the Arab Spring turns into the Semitic Summer? Wow, I just coined that. This weekend, 300,000 protesters took to the streets across the country of Israel. That's the largest ever protest in the country's history. The largest ever. This would be the equivalent of 12 million people in the streets of the United States. It is, I guess, being called the J14 movement. Maybe July 14th. This started when a young Israeli woman pitched a tent in Tel Aviv, I guess it was about 3 weeks ago now, to protest against the unaffordable cost of housing in the country. In just 3 weeks, Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu, in addition to being a far right wing, is it fair to say bigot? At least in practice. I think it's fair. His approval rating has tumbled nearly 20%. 20% in 3 weeks. And there are two different things that are operating here. Now, this coalition of 300,000 people, you know, could very well break up because there are a lot of different strains of, you know, both nationalists and... in other words, right-wing, anti-Palestinian types, and people who are looking for a peaceful settlement to deal with the question of Palestinians. This could rip apart this coalition, but you have 300,000 people who are protesting on the streets of Israel. We're going to try and get a guest later in the week. Somebody contacted me, sent an email, so I will go out to that person as well. Of course, I've been on the road, so it's been a little bit difficult. But years ago, the current president, Shimon Peres, warned that Bibi Netanyahu's economic policies
would lead to 6,000 millionaires and 6 million beggars. Does that sound familiar? Israel is now the second most unequal country in terms of income distribution in the world. Number one, can you guess, Matt? No?
Go ahead. I'm wrong.
Sorry, buddy.
I'm wrong no matter what.
You live there. It's called the United States of America.
I would not have guessed that.
In the Western world, I should say.
Oh, okay.
In the developed world.
If you had said that, then I would have guessed it.
There you go. All right. Well, we've got to take a break. But as we do, folks, I want to remind you of something. We're going to come back with Jeffrey Madrick. While I was on the road, those young upstarts at Citizens Radio, great show, very nice people. But almost as if it was like a coup. It's like a coup attempt. I go on the road, I travel, and what do? They overtake us on DonateYourAccount.com. So in other words, somehow, these young upstarts, they see that I'm out of town, they see that I'm a little bit too busy to tweet and make a call for you people to spread the word of the Majority Report, they sneak in there. And they steal our reigning title of essentially, well, let's like the chairman of Donate Your Account, I guess. So, folks, DonateYourAccount.com/MajorityFM. DonateYourAccount.com/MajorityFM. You can donate your Twitter account. If you don't have one, start one. Donate it. Even if you don't tweet, it's helpful. And you could donate a post on your Facebook account. We're not taking over your accounts. It's just one post a day. You can even just do one post a week or one post a month. This is a very small ask, as they say. And you can turn your friends on to the Majority Report, which is what we need, so that we can get more members, which is also what we need. One step at a time, though. All right, folks, just do it. We'll be right back with Jeff Madrick. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome to the program a contributor to the New York Review of Books and author Jeff Madrick, of course, author of The Case for Big Government, which was named one of two Penn 2009 Penn Galbraith Nonfiction Award finalists. And his new book is titled Age of Greed, The Triumph of Finance and the Decline of America, 1970 to Present. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure on a very odd day.
It is a very odd day. So first off, we all know that the S&P ratings agency downgraded the rating of U.S. Treasury and U.S. debt from AAA to AA+. Just tell us first, like, what is this? What is S&P? I mean, is it the what else do they do besides rate things?
Well, you know, they have a stock and bond analysis service. It's not merely a matter of doling out AAAs, AAs, and so forth. They actually analyze the way a Wall Street firm analyzes. They own the Standard & Poor's 500 index and several others, so they compute and analyze, you know, and send out analyses of those indices. And so in many ways, they're like a Wall Street firm, except they're not a brokerage firm. They get paid fees. I think the important thing is, however, there are two important things. Well, there are more than two. One is
we
they
got time
often
for
make
all
mistakes.
Of them.
their record of prescience, their record of clairvoyance, is something of a bad joke. Let me give you one that your viewers won't, your listeners won't know about. In 1970, they rated Penn Central, which was fairly newly merged, with a very high rating just before it went bankrupt, just like they did with Enron in 2000 or 2001, 30 years later. They rated New York City very highly just before it had its brush with bankruptcy. I forget the year. I think it was 1975. To give you an idea that they are very far from trustworthy.
So, and then that, and of course, everyone knows the story of what they did in terms of these mortgage-backed securities, which, of course, the irony here is they rated these mortgage-backed securities, gave them triple A ratings, and so they were an integral part to the financial crisis, which in many ways has created the large deficits and debts that they are now ostensibly giving the American securities such a low rating for.
Well, I think you have that exactly right, Sam. It was not only merely mortgage-backed securities in general, but that specific kind of security called collateralized debt obligations. There is no way any portion of those collateralized debt obligations based on subprime bonds deserved a AAA. And yes, they doled them out like Santa doles out candy on Christmas. I mean, it was remarkable.
Well, they doled it out.
They had a conflict of interest, Sam, as
right.
You're leading to. They made a lot of money giving AAAs out on those, and that was a key cause of the crisis. People bought them thinking they were riskless, and they were indeed very risky.
I mean, it's as if you use the analogy of Santa handing out candy to children. It's as if the children were also paying Santa to hand out that candy. And just, you hand out the candy to us, and Mom and Dad, they'll give us a break because it's Christmas.
That's right. That's right. I mean, deep conflicts of interest for which I think somebody should be holding them culpable, and maybe ultimately they will, at least in terms of civil suits. There are civil suits out there, but pretty outrageous.
So now explain to us exactly what their justification for this was. I mean, and where what you perceive their angle in this actually is.
Again, we're entering the realm of tragic comedy here. There is no way there would be a downgrade had there not been this political debt ceiling showdown in Congress. There would not be a downgrade now. Yet S&P is saying we're downgrading the U.S. because of its financial position, its future financial liabilities. It is less certain to be able to meet those financial liabilities. Now, let me be clear. They are saying both. They are worried about the politics in Congress that may refuse to raise the debt ceiling sometime in the future, and they are also worried about the level of American debt. But what's really triggered this was this debt showdown. So when they talk about the level of debt in America, there is some hypocrisy there. They would not have downgraded based only on the financial prospects of the U.S. They were prompted to downgrade by congressional political action. And that's what they should be saying very clearly. If they are worried about anything, it is that we will keep having showdowns. And I've got to say this. This is a Republican issue. This is not a Democratic issue. And, of course, you read the press, and they're always wishy-washy and saying both the Democrats and Republicans are to blame. This debt showdown was a Republican-determined issue to degrade Obama and or to promote a faith-based ideology about the role of government and how it should be diminished. Now, the Republicans have every right to try to do that. Let them do that, but they should not use the debt ceiling and jeopardize the credit of the U.S. in order to do that.
And this ratings agency, when they came out and have tried to justify their downgrade, they've also they explicitly said they're worried that Republican transience in terms of raising revenues is going to somehow And I guess the implication is also that that somehow the Obama administration and the Democrats would capitulate, somehow prevent taxes, the Bush tax cuts from expiring, and therefore, I guess, inhibit our government's ability to raise revenue. I mean, there's a quality to this where, like, a broken clock is right twice a day, isn't there?
Yeah, I think I think the point is nothing changed about the likelihood or the lack of likelihood of abandoning these enormous tax breaks for the wealthy. That was going to be a battle and will continue to be a battle. I think probably, you know, I would like to see those tax breaks go, but I don't think we should be raising taxes on the middle-income people in an environment where the economy is so very weak. And they, but, you know, down the road, and I think this is what you're alluding to, down the road, America has enormous capacity to tax and take care of its longer-term deficit problems. We do not tax our people that highly, and we do not have to tax much more to make these finances work. But we've been trapped in this mythology that our finances are terrible, that we can't afford this and that, that entitlements are going to break us. I should say that if we don't reform the healthcare system, entitlements could break us, because the reason Medicare and Medicaid will go up so much in the future is we have a pretty crazy and remarkably inefficient healthcare system. But we do have the capacity to raise taxes, and it's up to Obama, if we get the economy righted again, and not before that, to get that done.
Now, do you see this, you know, from my perspective, when I see this, now, and we should also say that it does not appear that the S&P rating, not only has it not not affected people's or investors or loaners, however you want to refer to them, bond buyers, not only has it not affected their faith in U.S. Treasury bonds, it seems to have had the opposite effect. It is in some way how sort of freaked people out about the stock market and
right.
driven them into Treasuries because it's more yeah. stable and safe.
Well, you hit, I think, what is the key point of the day, Sam. So I congratulate you on that.
Well, thank you.
Interest rate, you would think they're downgrading our debt, right? So interest rates would go up. And, you know, I would have thought that they'd go up momentarily. I never thought the downgrade itself was that big an event. People on Wall Street already know what's going on. But the opposite has occurred today. Interest rates have plunged on U.S. Treasury debt because it's a safe haven. And what we have been able to turn our attention to is what poor shape the economy is in. Growth, unemployment, all those factors that are so critical to the American population, all of that is in trouble. And this debt ceiling showdown, it was a little bit like driving in the rain and not being able to get your windshield wipers on,
uh-huh.
and you're arguing, get the windshield wipers on. Suddenly you get the windshield wipers on. In other words, we solved the debt ceiling problem temporarily. And you see, you're not even on the road once you get those wipers working. We're not even on the road. The debt ceiling in many respects was a sideshow. Now we're able to see whether or not we're on the road, and we realize we're not. Obama should, in my view, and I've been, unfortunately, a strong critic for somebody I voted for and believed in very much. He should have had his eye on the road all along, and the road is jobs and wages and restoring growth to the economy.
So in other words, it was almost the resolution of the debt ceiling that has caused this freak out in the stock markets, because they realize, you know, suddenly every story that had included this sort of tidbit on, you know, in the last sentence of the last paragraph of every story, every report that comes out now in terms of the resolution of the debt ceiling recognizes that when you have cuts during a time of economic weakness, it hurts the economy.
Yeah. And I think, you know, and stocks are going down now because the economy is weak. People are worried about global weakness now.
You don't think that the stock market drop on Thursday was a function in any way of people sort of assuming that S&P was going to downgrade our treasuries? Do you?
Do I think the stock downfall was in anticipation of the downgrade?
Yeah.
Is that the question? I didn't. Hello?
Yes, that is the question.
I don't think so. But, you know, I'm not sure. I doubt it, though. Anything can move a stock market. Certainly, it was the news was certainly leaking on Friday. And I think I was doing Keith Olbermann's program when it finally broke. But it's possible. I think, however, when people woke up, the plunge in stock prices are responding to much more to weakness in the economy than any upgrade. The upgrades have some consequence, and you know the downgrades. I mean, and you know Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were downgraded. That's a lot of debt. Municipalities may be downgraded and so forth. But the real issue we're facing is the darn economy, and we and some Republicans in Congress better get their eye on it. Some idea that cutting government spending is going to restore economic growth. We have a great example in UK. They are in trouble.
Right.
Austerity economics is bringing no growth, and even some semi-riots in a city in England.
We've had riots in Tottenham, and it's starting to spread around the country. It was initially a function of a shooting, but it is spreading. I mean, it's definitely in the air over there. And you're right. There's been zero growth for the 9 months since austerity programs were instituted. But let me get back again to S&P for a second, because from my perspective, I'm trying to figure out why they did this, and they're not doing it necessarily on economic grounds. They're doing it even by their own admission, on some level of anticipating the political landscape, ignoring the fact that we are constitutionally prohibited for not meeting our obligations to creditors as a country. And there seems to be at least an interpretation in some of the by the establishment that this actually means that we need to cut Social Security and Medicare more. Is this simply
You're breaking up on me.
I'm sorry.
I can't quite follow the question.
It seems that this S&P downgrade is being interpreted as a means in which to cite more reasons why we should achieve some type of grand bargain. In other words, cutting entitlements. Do you perceive this as basically the same thing as a lobbyist group would want to do?
Oh, boy, Sam, I apologize. I'm not quite getting it. But are you saying the S&P is part of some kind of political deal for a grand bargain?
Yes. I'm suggesting that this downgrade in the ratings is being used as a means in which to increase pressure to cut things like Social Security and Medicare.
The downgrade in the ratings will enable us to reduce Social Security and Medicare. Is that your question? It's just that we have a bad connection.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. We can hear you fine. I'm not sure why you can't hear me, but
I'm so sorry about that.
Let me try it one more time.
I enjoyed talking to you.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much, Jeff. I'll pick this up later, but thank you for joining us.
I hope we can do it again.
Okay. Certainly. It'd be great.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, folks. I'm not sure why we had that problem. You know, sometimes the phone lines don't work. I don't know what it is. But we'll stick around, because in 5 minutes we're going to be talking to Laura Clausen. But I want to bring this up here, because we have a situation here where clearly the market for treasuries is not impressed with what the rating agency says, right? I mean, we see this today where you have benchmark rates for 5-year treasuries, 10-year treasuries have all dropped. The stock market has freaked out because they don't know what's going on here. And as Jeff Madrick suggests, and I should mention his book again, Age of Greed, The Triumph of Finance and the Decline of America. I want to have him on just to talk about that. The stock market is dropping here. People are actually flocking to treasuries. Not only are they saying we disagree with the idea that S&P has put forth that if you loan the United States money, you may not get the money back. We actually think it's more likely that this is the safest investment we can make. And I will say that they put the story out before the results of before the markets opened today, before it was quite clear that people were flocking. They were rushing to loan the United States money. It's the safest investment I can make. Even with yields down 5 year to under 2%, even with yields at 10 years below 3%, they are flocking to loan the U.S. money. And so how does the New York Times report on this yesterday? The downgrade of the United States government credit rating by Standard & Poor's is almost sure to increase pressure on a new congressional super committee. This is the super Congress. This is the gang of 12. To mute ideological disagreements and recommend a package of deficit reductions far exceeding its original goal of at least $1.5 trillion. This according to lawmakers on Sunday. In other words, we're going to get that grand bargain. We know the Republicans still will not raise revenue. I stand by my prediction of revenue is going to come from actually giving corporations discounts on money they repatriate from overseas. Even before the panel is appointed, its mission is expanding. See, this is just, what? This is fabrication. This is exactly how we went to war, folks. One agency that means nothing, some report from S&P, which means nothing, zero. They have no credibility. They've had no credibility in the past. They are at the very least, partially responsible and culpable for this financial meltdown we have. And not only that, the very people they're supposed to be warning about government debt have completely ignored them. And not just ignored them, done the opposite of what they said. This is almost like literally like what my daughter does when I tell her to go brush her teeth. She walks into the other room. Otherwise, taxpayers may eventually have to pay. Its role is not just to cut the annual budget deficit and slow the explosive growth of federal debt, but also to appease the markets and help restore the United States' top credit rating of AAA. This is written yesterday. Before they find out that, in fact, there is no problem. There's no going to be increase in our in borrowing money. And yet, it goes on to say the first round of savings under the new law coming from annual caps on appropriations is estimated at $917 billion over 10 years. Standard & Poor's has said it was hoping for the $4 trillion in deficit reduction. No one listening to them. If I could short Standard & Poor's rating agency, maybe I can, I don't know. But if I could have done it this weekend, I would have made a killing. If the Joint Committee wanted to reach that goal, it might seek a bigger, more comprehensive deal, aiming to save $3 trillion rather than $1.5 trillion over 10 years. See, this save, not increase revenue, a debt and a deficit has two parts. One is what you spend, one is what you take in. But when we see this written in the establishment media, when we see senators go on these programs, when we see congressmen, when we see any of these rich people, they talk about saving money, cutting money, cutting Social Security, cutting Medicare. We are about to get screwed. Can I say fucked?
Sure.
I know we can, based on our iTunes explicit rating. And they are using this. This is a holy, holy... This is... Standard & Poor's is a lobbying group. And they are lobbying on behalf of the same interests as the U.S. Chamber of Commerce or the billionaires that they represent or Goldman Sachs or the banks. Pick it. You choose. Same agenda. Let us take some of that $2.5 trillion in the Social Security Trust Fund and just, instead of calling it a default on what we owe the Social Security system, we won't call it a default. We'll just call it the cost of living adjustment. But it is a default. But we will never default to bondholders, no. And constitutionally speaking, we can't really default to Social Security unless, of course, we simply change the program and they don't need the money. It just sits in the Treasury and we can keep draining from it. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Laura Claussen from the Daily Kos, she'll tell us about this big, big Verizon strike. We'll be right back. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. On the phone, Laura Claussen. She is the labor editor of Daily Kos. You can find it at dailykos.com/labor. Laura, a big, big strike started at 12 a.m., I guess, today.
Actually, it started over the weekend, but this is the first real business day that it's happening. So, yeah, 45,000 Verizon workers are on strike. This is the biggest strike in several years, and it's expected to go on a bit.
All right. Well, so tell us what just walk me through what are why is there a strike? Is there contract up? Have they been waiting for a new contract? What's the situation?
Their contract is up. They've been negotiating with Verizon for 6 weeks at least, and there has been no movement from the company, which has been demanding major concessions from workers.
All right, so give me a sense of what Verizon wants to do in terms of demands.
So Verizon wants to eliminate job security provisions, certain disability benefits. They want to curtail sick days. They want to replace the current healthcare plan with something that will cost workers a whole lot more and offer them less. They're freezing pensions for current workers and eliminating them for future workers and replacing them with a 401k plan. I think there's also issues about how much they'll be allowed to contract out work to low-wage contractors and send things overseas.
So basically, start shifting more and more work to non-union workers, right? And
absolutely, okay. and make the union workers more like non-union workers as far as their pay and benefits.
How many people work at Verizon? Is it 45,000? Does this include Verizon Wireless and all the subsidiary companies, or what?
No, this is just the union members who are in the wireline companies. The wireless is pretty much entirely non-union, if not entirely non-union, and there are other non-union workers at Verizon. So this is just a subset of the company, and obviously they're eager to avoid the rest of their employees becoming unionized.
Now, Verizon must be in pretty tough shape. They must be going through some pretty hard times in terms of their revenues and their profits. I mean, to be demanding these type of cuts from their workers. Just give me an update. I mean, how much, are these guys near bankruptcy? I mean, they must be really hurting.
Actually, they're looking at something like $6 billion in profit this year.
Oh, wait, only $6 billion in profits? Well, that's not nearly as much as the oil companies. So they have $6 billion in profits.
Yes, and over the past four years, they've paid their top executives $258 million.
Well, that's virtually impossible to keep people at those type of rates.
Right,
I don't know how they're manning I don't know how anybody stays in their executive suites with the $260 million over the past 4 years. Well, they deserve it. They're getting $6 billion in profits, I guess. But I guess none of those 45,000 workers had any part in those profits.
Absolutely not. And, you know, Verizon is saying that they're just terribly overpaid because if they work a whole lot of overtime, maybe they can raise their base pay from up to, you know, $90,000, which is ridiculous. No one should make such money.
So there are actually workers who work for Verizon who are making $90,000 that are not the CEO?
There are, and that's what Verizon wants to put a stop to, that there are people who are making middle-class wages there as opposed to poverty wages or very, very rich person wages.
And so there are protests going on all across the country, is that right?
It's mostly on the East Coast, but up and down the East Coast, yes.
And so give me a sense of like what happens next. Are they still negotiating? Are they still at the table? Do people join in these picket lines if they want to support these union workers? What's happening?
Absolutely. The workers would welcome anyone who wants to turn out to a picket line, and they are all over, certainly all over New York State. Washington, D.C. was having a rally just about now. What's next is that the union is calling on Verizon to come back to the bargaining table. Verizon's been telling the press, you know, oh, it's just sort of happening that we're not negotiating. The union must not want it. And meanwhile, the union says Verizon is canceling negotiating meeting after negotiating meeting all weekend long. So they're really hoping that Verizon will come back to the table this afternoon.
Well, thank you for keeping us updated on this. And we're going to play a clip from the rally that took place in New York City this weekend. And people can go to dailycoz.com/labor. Am I right on that?
Yes, and I will have links up.
Okay, great. And so if you want to find out where you can go and support these workers, you can do it there. Laura, thank
Absolutely.
You so much for joining us.
Thanks.
All right, let's play this clip of what took place this weekend at this rally. You have it?
Got it. Here we go.
Brothers and sisters, what they really want. They want to bust your union. That's what they really want. They want to take this contract, and they want to do this with it. They want to take out all the pages. They want to take back everything that you've bargained over the last 60 years. They want to destroy your contract. They want to destroy your standard of living. They want you to go back with a goddamn comic book for a contract. My brothers and sisters, that's not gonna happen either. No matter what we gotta do, this contract stays intact.
We're going to strike for good wages, good benefits, anything it takes, we will strike.
Wow. Now, you didn't put that music in there. That's part of their video that's online. We're going to post that video on Majority FM. But it was pretty cool to watch that guy tear up that contract. And I also just like his accent.
Yeah, it was pretty dramatic.
Yes. Well, the music helped to create the drama, too. All right, folks. We're just about out of time for the pre-show, the show. And then we're going to go into the post-show where you can IM me, of course. But we're going to play the Screaming Majority. Sent us, I have it.
Okay.
On Friday, I couldn't do it because I was in California. We'll play the Screaming Majority, and then we will. So let's play the song. What about the jobs? This, of course, is from David Benjoya and the Screaming Majority. Sent us their song of the week, and I don't know what to tell you. I missed it. Somehow I missed it on Friday. Because it was so crazy. All right, here it is.
No!
Wow. Screaming majority. Expletive laden, great song, though. What about the jobs? We should put that into the rotation. Very funny. The lyrics are great. We should post those lyrics, too, on today's post at majority.fm. Folks, I need your membership to continue this program. So for the thousands of you who listen to this program for free every day, not only are you missing what comes next in this show at Majority FM, I'm going to be talking about Syria. I'm going to be talking about the news out of Afghanistan. Just how racist Fox News is. The recall elections. If you live in Wisconsin, I know that by the time you download this, you are planning or you have already voted. Very important in those recall elections. If you live in one of those six districts in Wisconsin, very important.
Remember, it's not the 11th like the Koch brothers want you to think.
That's right. Tomorrow, the 9th. Myla's birthday, incidentally. But we will talk more about that in the post-show, and you can IM me at Majority FM, or you can call me at 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920. I will take your phone calls, all part of the great post-show, which if you do not become a member, you cannot listen to. And as always, if you buy your junk through Amazon, we get a cut. If you use the Majority FM link, you can go there, link it, bookmark it, always go through there. You won't notice a difference. We'll be rolling in the dough. It'll push us into that over $250,000 tax bracket. So we can screw you little people. But in the meantime, it's still a nice gesture. And, of course, justcoffee.coop, coffee, tea, chocolate, fair trade, organic if you want. And use the coupon code MAJORITY, get a 10% discount, support the program, and then finally donateyouraccount.com/majority FM so that we can beat those young whippersnappers over at Citizen Radio.
They said that our listeners were too old to figure it out.
What?
They said that.
Wow. Shots fired, ladies and gentlemen. All right, join me on the post show. Talk to you in a moment.